Have you ever heard of the Rechabites? Probably not. So you probably heard of the Amorites, right? Or the Canaanites, Jebusites, those type of people. But have you heard about the Rechabites? Now, what's interesting is they're a special group of people recorded in Jeremiah chapter 35. And so you may not know them, but I hope, first off, after this lesson, you'll know who they are. But second off, it's people that we need to know. And so Jeremiah, in Jeremiah 35, is going to set up an object lesson with this particular group of people for the people of Judah. And so just to give you a little bit of the time frame, this is after the time or around the time of Josiah. And at this point, the northern 10 tribes, they've already gone off into captivity. And you know, they only have the bottom two tribes, really just one tribe. And so Josiah is this great king right before the end, and he's trying to reform. And so the problem is, the people didn't really do that. And so they're about to go off into captivity. Josiah was pretty much the last good king. And so it's during this time where they're about to go into captivity, he has this group of people, and he wants to give them an object lesson. Now, what's interesting is, really, their history. So you may be asking, who are the Rechabites? So I need you to just kind of bear with me for a couple of minutes, because this isn't going to make any sense if you don't know the history. So let me give you a little bit of a history lesson, and then we'll go through and look at Jeremiah 35. Now, their history is interesting. They're part of a group called the Kenites. And they are people that go back to the time of Abraham in Genesis 15, but they're not actually of the line of Abraham. They're of the line of Jethro. So this goes to the class on Wednesday night that Bill's been talking about, Jethro, that's Moses' father-in-law, if we remember anything about him. And so they were invited to go into the land whenever they went into the land. And in Judges chapter 1, that's what they did. They were dwelling in the land. But here's some important things. They are not Israelites. Okay? They're people that dwelled in the land. They're around the Israelites. Not actually Israelites. Not in the actual promised land in sense that it was promised to them. They're dwelling in it, getting the benefits of it, but it's not their land. And so these are important. Now turn to 2 Kings chapter 10. We'll get to Jeremiah 35 here in just a minute. Now Rechab, for the name Rechabites, right? Rechab was one of the fathers of this, but he was the father of an important man named Jonadab. And so we're going to talk about a little bit of this as we talk about the Rechabites here. And so Jonadab is introduced to us in 2 Kings 10. So here's another important history marker. So this is the northern 10 tribes whenever this is being talked about. And so Jehu was pretty much the one sort of good king. If you remember Ahab, he was like the worst king. And he was just terrible, and he was rendered as a judgment on him. His line was going to be broken, and guess who broke it? It was Jehu. He went through and pretty much just cleaned house on Ahab's family. And so Jehu is the avenger. And so in chapter 10, he's doing that avenging work. He's doing the fulfillment of God's prophecy. And so as Jehu is going to purge Baal from the land, guess who he meets? He meets a man by the name of Jonadab. And we see the interaction here in verse 15. In 2 Kings 10, it says, "Now when he had departed from there," this was after rending judgment on some of the line of Ahab, "when he had departed from there, he met Jehonadab," Jonadab, same person, "the son of Rechab, coming to meet him. And he greeted him and said to him, 'Is your heart right, as my heart is with your heart?' And Jehonadab answered, 'It is.' Jehu said, 'If it is, give me your hand.' And he gave him his hand and took him up in the chariot. He said, 'Come and see, come with me and see my zeal for the Lord.' So he made him ride in his chariot. When he came to Samaria, he killed all who remained to Ahab in Samaria until he had destroyed him according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke to Elijah." So when you look at Jehu, he's fulfilling the will of God. And at this point, he is very zealous for God. He's doing what's right. And guess who he comes in contact with? Here's Jonadab, or Jehonadab, whatever the picture is. And so it went even to the point of wiping out those that were devoted to Baal. In fact, there's a mention in 2 Kings that he was so successful, Jehu was, that he removed Baal from Israel. He was very successful. And so this was a time of reform, and the only things he really didn't get rid of were those two golden calves that were set up by Jeroboam many years ago. Okay, now the reason this is all important is because Jonadab is a person that has seen the wickedness of the people of Israel. He's experiencing it firsthand. He's seen what Ahab has done. He's seen this promised land and how they've just gone completely off the rails. And so he's looking at his children that are not Israelites, and he's saying, hold on, you need to do some things differently than these people. And so he's going to give some particular commands to them. And so when you look at what their problems were, it was really centered around two main ideas. It was sin, violation of God's will, and idolatry. That was the main concepts that they were struggling with, the people of Israel were. And so this unfaithfulness of Israel was actually predicted by God. If you remember in Deuteronomy 8, he said what's going to happen is you're going to get in that land and you're going to forget everything that I've done for you. It's going to be really nice. It's going to be just a wonderful place. Things are going to go well and you're going to forget all about me. We talked about this a little in class, right? One of the greatest challenges we have is the pleasures and comforts that we have. Now, all of this helps to set up the framework because in Jeremiah 35, what he does is he gives some commands, four commands to his children. And here's these four commands. They are, don't drink wine, don't build a house, don't sow seed, plant, or own a vineyard. And then the fourth one is, dwell in tents and sojourn in the land. And so the reason that he said this in Jeremiah 35, which we'll come to in just a minute, it is so that you may live long in the land that you are sojourning. Now, doesn't that sound familiar? Live long in the land. Doesn't that sound familiar? Because that was given to the people of Israel. And so Jonadab is looking and saying, okay, Israel's been unfaithful. I want you to live in the land faithful. And so here's four things that I want you to do. Now, you know what these four things have in common? All four of them show a connection or permanence to the land. And so whenever he's saying, okay, wine, that's some of the pleasures that come from the land. Having a house, that's getting comfortable in the land. Seed, plant, vineyard, that's having property, working that property. Tents and sojourning, that's you're always constantly moving, right? You're constantly uncomfortable. Don't get settled down. And so these are the commands that he gives so that they would dwell in the land and that they would continue that. Now, in Jeremiah 35, that is the context for this discussion. And so now turn to Jeremiah chapter 35. So there's your history lesson. You can't say that you haven't got a little bit of history today. But in Jeremiah 35, now we can make a lot of sense out of what he is doing here. And so in Jeremiah 35, we're in that time of Josiah. And what Jeremiah does is he calls the Rechabites into the house of the Lord. And so just imagine you're a Rechabite. You're not actually of the line of Israel. You're encouraged to come in by Jeremiah, to come into the house of the Lord. And guess what Jeremiah does? He sets down some wine right in front of them. Now, this is going to be an interesting situation based off of what your father has already told you. Now, let's consider a few more things to help understand this illustration. As I mentioned, number one, they're not Jews, right? They're not circumcised like the Israelites. They are not in the promised land. They are not God's covenant people. Also, number two, these are not commands of God. These are going to be commands of Jonadab. And so he's able to take of this. There's nothing, they're not violating a law or anything like that. And so despite not being Jews, they're servants of God. But the commands do not come from God. They're coming from Jonadab. And now, as well, these are liberties that are restricted. This isn't, again, a matter of sin. It's a matter of not taking a luxury. Okay, everybody understanding the context here. Now, here's one other important thing. It's been 200 years since Jonadab gave the command. 200 years. Our generations have kind of rolled on at this point. You think about how old our country is? Right, we're over 200 years, but I mean, not really that old. And so he laid out these commands for his kids. And so their response is very interesting. Read with me now in verse 5. In verse 5, it says, "Then I set before the men of the house of the Rechabites pitchers full of wine and cups, and I said to them, 'Drink wine.' But they said, 'We will not drink wine, for Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, You shall not drink wine, you or your sons, forever. You shall not build a house. You shall not sow seed. You shall not plant a vineyard or own one. But in tents you shall dwell all your days, that you may live many days in the land where you sojourn. We have obeyed the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, in all that he commanded us, not to drink wine all our days, we, our wives, our sons, or our daughters, nor to build houses to dwell in, and we do not have vineyard or field or seed. We have only dwelt in tents and have obeyed and have done according to all that Jonadab our father commanded us. But when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against the land, we said, come and let us go to Jerusalem before the army of the Chaldeans and before the army of the Arameans. So we have dwelt in Jerusalem. So it's interesting. What was their response? What's their response? Well, you know, Jonadab's been gone. He's dead and gone. Give me that wine right now. Is that what he said? It was very, very different. Out of their respect for their father and these commands, they had given up some very important luxuries. And so they did this out of respect. And so the only reason, in fact, they're in Jerusalem at this point is because there's this big army coming through and trying to wipe out the land. We're trying to be saved. That's the only reason we're even in a city. So what should we learn about these men? You know, it's interesting when you look at people that read, and like in Jeremiah 35, they come to this and we kind of get the wrong messages. Now, I want to learn these lessons. These lessons are important, but they're not the lesson, which we'll come to in just a second. So what should we learn? Well, here's the first thing. Shouldn't we learn the importance of honoring our parents? I'll tell you, there's something to be said about honoring parents. It was a cornerstone of their culture already to have respect for those that are older. But imagine respecting what a father said 200 years ago. That's some respect, isn't it? There's honor that is there. You know, it's been said that when a child does wrong, that he has forgotten the face of his father. I'll tell you, there's something to be said about that. When a father is there, you have respect for them. And so whenever we're obedient, whether they are there or not, that's showing our respect for them. And here's the thing. God has always put obedience to parents at a premium, hasn't He? I mean, obviously we see it here, but how about in Exodus chapter 20, one of the Ten Commandments, right? What was it? One of them is obey your parents, right? So that you will live long in the earth. And I'll tell you, this is all throughout the Old Testament. But here's the thing. Isn't this true for us? Think about Ephesians chapter 6. You remember that famous passage we go to about fathers, you know, not provoking your children to wrath, all of that. You remember what passage he grabbed to talk about honoring parents? He grabbed that one. And he said that you still have that promise, that long life and hope for the land and all of that. Yeah, that's for you too. Except it's obviously in a different sense, right? They're not in the area there of the promised land. And so when we learn this lesson, this is important. Children, if you're in the audience, right? Listen to mommy and daddy, right? That's important. But here's the thing. Were these people just little kids needing to listen to their parents? No, they were much older. And they were still very respectful and obedient to their parents. And that's a premium that we learn. And we learn that lesson here. Now, that's not the only thing. We also learn that we are sojourners, right? I mean, that's another important lesson that we see throughout the Old Testament. See, the land was not promised to the Rechabites, but they're being blessed while they're there. But these were restrictions that helped them to live holy, and particularly to help them remember, you don't belong here. This is not your land. You need to be thankful that you're there. And so there's important lessons there. But think about this. Do you realize this is something that God wanted Israel to remember? For example, in Leviticus chapter 19, as he's talking to the Israelites, he says, don't forget, you used to be strangers and foreigners off in a foreign land, and I'm taking you and I'm putting you in this land now. And don't forget that. And the reason that was so important is because when strangers came through, guess how they needed to treat them? I'll tell you, you treat someone different whenever they've gone through the same situations, right? That's the kind of thing that he had in mind. But isn't this lesson for us as well? In 1 Peter 2, verse 11, what does he say that we are? We are strangers and pilgrims, right? We have a different attitude. And so when I think about this world, is this world my home? Or is this world a temporary dwelling that I realize I'm going to my ultimate heavenly home? See, these are things that are important. These are needed. But here's the thing. I don't want you to lose sight of what this text is talking about. This text, I'll just tell you, is not about honoring your parents, even though that's kind of part of it. And it's not about being sojourners in the land, even though that's kind of part of it too. There is one primary lesson, and that's the lesson that I want to share with you now. In Jeremiah 35, go back there now. This section is an object lesson with one primary point, is that it is a comparison of the Rechabites' faithfulness to the Father compared to Israelites' unfaithfulness to God. That's what this whole text is all about. So look here in Jeremiah chapter 35. Let's read now, picking up in verse 12. Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, saying, "Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, go and say to the men of Judah, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, will you not receive instruction by listening to my words, declares the Lord? The words of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, which he commanded his sons not to drink, which he commanded his sons not to drink wine or observe. So they do not drink wine to this day, for they have obeyed their father's command. But I have spoken to you again and again, yet you have not listened to me. Also I have sent to you all my servants, the prophets, sending them again and again, saying, turn now every man from his evil way and amend your deeds, and do not go after other gods to worship them. Then you will dwell in the land which I have given to you and to your forefathers. But you have not inclined your ear or listened to me. Indeed, the sons of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, have observed the command of their father, which he commanded them. But this people has not listened to me." What was the point? The point was they would not listen out of respect for who God was. See, when we see this point right here, we understand a fundamental point about obedience. Why do we obey? Why do we obey God? There's a lot of different reasons. But if we obey because of fear of punishment, realize that may be one reason, but that is an incomplete reason. One reason that we obey is because of respect for what our Father has done for us. And that is important. So look at the comparison here. Let me see if I can put these up here to where we can see it. So you have Jonadab, right? He's a physical father. So there's respect. God puts the obedience to parents as a premium. I've laid that out. Now, he gives commands, but there's no covenant. He wasn't there with the people back in Mount Sinai and all of that, so it's inferior. Now, this is in matters of liberty. You can either have it or not, but he just wants it restricted for a purpose. And it's not the promised land, but look at how they responded. I mean, it wasn't even like hesitation. Put the wine down? Absolutely not. Very simple, very clear. Because of who my God is, or because of who my Father is, I'm not going to do that because I have respect for Him. Now, let's compare it. On the other side, you have God, right? He's the spiritual Father. Which one's greater? Your Father is important. Your physical Father is important, but your spiritual Father is more important. He made who you really are, okay? Then He gives commands. Again, higher position, higher importance. But not only that, he made a covenant. You remember Exodus 20? All of this mountain burning with fire and all of this stuff? Yeah, that's the picture. You made a covenant. You made an agreement with me. Then, it's in matters of idols and sin. This isn't liberties anymore. This is morality. This is right and wrong. This is serving idols or serving the true God of heaven. And then, it's the promised land. You remember all of the Exodus, all of this bringing them out and putting them in the land? And then how do they respond? You see the comparison? It is a very powerful comparison. To understand you respect your Father and you'll listen to His will, and I'm your Heavenly Father and you won't listen to me? That's the lesson. That's the point that he is trying to make here in Jeremiah chapter 35. And so what do you think God's response would be? Well, God is obviously angry, just like a father would be with his child that will not listen to him. And so the comparison is not even close. And so these people would not give God the respect that he deserved. And so because of idolatry and sin, they were pursuing things like rampant sexuality, child sacrifice, ignoring their laws and customs. They just practice the same things the people in the land practice. But here's the worst part of all of this. You know the heart behind idolatry? The heart behind idolatry is, I don't want God. That's the heart of it. And that's what was happening here. Their father had done all of that for them, and they were saying, hit the road. We don't even care. And so God had to keep His word. And in verse 17, He does that exactly. He goes through and He takes those people, that covenant that He had made with them, and said, if you're going to be unfaithful, I'm going to keep my end of the deal, and you're gone. And He takes them and puts them in captivity for 70 years. Now, when we look, we obviously see that's the important point. So the power in this is comparison. That's what the whole point is. The point of the text is comparison. But here's the thing that I think is interesting. What should we learn about it, right? You may be saying, okay, I'm tired of the history lesson. What's the value to me, right? I know, okay, listen to parents. Okay, I'm a sojourner. But here's the thing. You want to know what the point is? Let's lay this comparison back out. All right, so you have the first comparison. Here's Jonadab. All right, understand Jonadab, right? Okay, here's the people of Israel, right? We understand this comparison. Now, think about this. Who are we? There's a third comparison we need to make. Think about this. Spiritual father gives commands, but who has a better covenant? We have a much better covenant, right? That's the whole point of the book of Hebrews. We have a better covenant, okay? The times where God tells us, it is matters of idolatry and sin to stay away from, right? We understand that, okay? Then think about the land. How long were they going to be in that land? Just as long as they lived, right? But think about the land that's promised to us. It just goes on and on and on. It's an eternal, heavenly land, right? How about us? Are we faithful? You see the comparison? It's easy to go through and say, oh, look at those Israelites. Look at how bad they were and how they didn't obey. And then we look at ourselves and we're not unfaithful. We have so much better promises than even they do. See, think about this. Turn to Hebrews chapter 12. Let's go to a few places. We'll come back to Jeremiah 35 at the end. But in Hebrews chapter 12, this is actually the main point. In a book, at the end of it, that has gone through and compared covenants. And how what we have is so much better than what the Jews had. And how you don't need to go back to the old law because what you have is so much better, right? This comparison, the exact comparison that I'm making right now, is the exact point of the book of Hebrews. Now look at what he argues at the end of it in chapter 12, here in verse 3. For consider him who endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Yet you have not resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin. And you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. How'd they forgot? They forgot because they were in struggling with sin. They're struggling with persecution. They forgot something, that they were his sons. And look now in verse 5. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. You see the comparison? There's Jonadab right there in verse 9. That's that same illustration. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, so that we may share his holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. What's his point? His point is exactly this comparison right here. And when we look at our obedience, we obey because of who God is and because of what God has done for us and how good he is. And we understand that he is the true father that has discipline and instruction, but not capriciously. Not like your true dad that might have like kind of fudged on some things and kind of been, maybe he was never there, maybe he was just a terrible father. That's not how God is. He's the perfect father that is always working for our benefit. always working for our good. But here's the thing. Is discipline fun? No, 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 no. Discipline's not fun. But it does have a fruit of righteousness that comes. And that's his point here in Hebrews chapter 12. And so when you're struggling with sin and struggling with obedience and it's difficult, what he's pointing out is you need to remember this instruction. It's hard because he's trying to help you to improve, to bear that fruit of righteousness, and there particularly is to share in his holiness. He wants you to be with him. That's the whole point of why a good father gives all the instructions. Now, here's the thing I think that's important. We've talked about why we obey God, but here's another thing. Why do we not obey God? Is it because we go and we bow down to little metal images, things that we've carved out? No, think about Colossians chapter 3. The reason that we don't obey God, interestingly, is the exact same reason that Judah did not. It is idolatry. In Colossians chapter 3 for a moment. In Colossians chapter 3. See, idolatry looks different. Where people don't bow down to physical images, but it is still just as powerful. It hasn't lost its power. And in fact, that's why Paul in 1 Corinthians 10, just by comparison, he tells them, flee from idolatry. Idolatry's there. You have plenty of places. John said to beware of idols, to flee from idols, that picture. And so in Colossians 3, here in verse 5, look at what he says. He's telling them to set your mind on Christ, be focused on Him, and then he compares with idolatry. He says in verse 5, therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. For it is because of these things the wrath of God will come upon the sons of disobedience. And in them you also once walked when you were living in them, but now you also put them all aside. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices, and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge, according to the image of the one who created him. I tell you, there's so many pictures of idolatry and images and all that throughout that whole picture. But the idea here is whenever I pursue things like sexual immorality, our evil passions, our greed, our evil speech, that ultimately what I'm pursuing is an idol. I'm pursuing someone's approval. I'm pursuing money. I'm pursuing power or position. All those types of things. And I'm bowing down to that instead of bowing down to God. You see that? That's the picture that he's making here. And so when I struggle with sin, it means I want something more than God. That's the whole picture. It's the same all the way through. But here's the thing that I think is interesting. It's not just in these that we have this problem. Did you realize that there are plenty of idols in religious places as well? Where people do religious things, but they do it for the wrong reason. That's what Matthew 6 was all about. And so we can do it in religious things like unauthorized worship. When you think about the idea of instrumental music, now this is a whole other lesson for a different time, but when you think about instrumental music, one of the reasons that people do that is because they like the way that it sounds, right? It's pleasing to me. It's what I want. I'll tell you, this is the basis of all unauthorized worship. You can go back to the Old Testament and many other places. When it's I want something, guess what that is? If I want it and it's not what God wants, that is idolatry. That's what the picture is. And you can see it in when someone teaches a false gospel. They want to soft serve the truth and they want to teach something different than what God has said. What is that? That's idolatry. It's man. Man putting forth his will instead of what God has said. Or maybe when we change the purpose of the church. It's all the same thing. That's what I want you to realize. It's all the same picture. It's replacing who God is with what we want. Now, ultimately, then, when we realize that all sin falls in this category, we will understand what Samuel said in 1 Samuel 15, where he said, rebellion is as the sin of divination, and presumption is as iniquity and idolatry. You remember what the context was in that? That was in 1 Samuel 15, where Saul was going through and he was doing things his way. And he came and he said, I have obeyed. But he had not obeyed. It was idolatry. That's what he was pointing out. And so whenever we try to replace God, the consequence is turning to sin and to evil. So then when we look at this question, this is really what we've been analyzing, we have to ask this and answer it honestly. Do we respect and obey God because of who He is, right? It's not because we're just afraid of punishment. It's because of His position as our Father, and because of all the things that He's done for us, are we going to follow after idols and sin? Now here, I'll just give you one little tidbit. I don't know if Byron talked about this. Here's the thing about worshiping those idols. Those idols will give you what you want temporarily, but all of them will come crashing down. Because idols, ultimately, what are they? If they're not made by God, they are made by man. And they will all come crumbling down. And so when we think about this idea, we need to ask a few questions. Do we respect God? If so, it's simple. We will honor Him and we'll obey Him. It's very simple. It's just like you respect and honor your parents. But think about this. Do we joyfully obey Him? See, there's a lot of kids that will obey their parents, but they really don't want to. They'll kind of grumble and complain, oh, Mom and Dad are making me do this again. Well, they'll obey in the letter of the law, but that's not really obedience if we don't have the right attitude. But if we do obey from the right perspective, we understand from 1 John 5 that His commandments are not burdensome and we enjoy them. But think about this as well. Do we obey completely and promptly? Do you see that back there in Jeremiah 35? Did they hesitate? They didn't hesitate. They had already made up their mind. They were convicted in respecting their father, and they did it like that. See, that's what obedience is. Now, when we look at this story, ultimately, I hope that we've seen the main point here. Don't follow after idols and sin. Be obedient to God, right? That's the main takeaway from all of this. But I want to show you the end of the story. Back there in Jeremiah 35, the story ends with two very different endings that I believe has a bit of irony as you look at the way that it's structured and the comparison. You have some people that are in the land that was not promised to them, and they get to stay there. And then you have people that were in the land, and it was promised to them, and they don't get to stay there. And so in Jeremiah 35, you have the people of Judah. They are either killed or sent off into captivity for 70 years, and they face a terrible fate. But look here at verses 18 and 19, and what happened to those obedient Rechabites. It says, Then Jeremiah said to the house of the Rechabites, Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, because you have obeyed the command of Jonadab your father, kept all His commandments and done according to all that He commanded you. Therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Jonadab the son of Rechab, shall not lack a man to stand before Me always. What was the promise? You, because you've been faithful, you'll always have someone before God. And you know that history actually bears this out, is that these people, in contrast to the line of Ahab and those people that were unfaithful, they had someone that went on and on. And so these people were traditionally connected to the scribes. Traditionally, that was for Levites. There's one that rebuilt the walls in Nehemiah 3. And even traditionally, there was someone all the way up to the destruction of Jerusalem. What God promised here kept on coming true. So that's the kind of promise that I want, and hopefully that you want, is that I want to stand before God. I want to be like one of those Rechabites. But here's the thing. Ultimately, the call of the Rechabites is the call for each of us. Is that will we be faithful to our Father or will we not? But here's the thing I want you to understand. I don't want you to miss Jesus in this text, and I don't want you to miss the good news. Because here's the thing. When you think about your faithfulness to God, how many of us have been that obedient son there the entire time, done everything right? Nobody has, right? Nobody has. And see, this is what's interesting about Jeremiah 35. First off, when you see Jesus, He is the true and better Rechabite. He's the one that willingly gave up all the pleasures that He had in heaven, and He gave it all up to come and to live here. More than that, he's the one that obeyed his father's will perfectly in order to die for you and for me. He's the obedient son that did exactly like the father wanted. And more than that, where does he stand forever? He stands before the Father because he was faithful to who God was. But here's the thing that is such good news. He's the faithful Son of God who realized that we were not. And he's a faithful Son that died for all the unfaithful ones, all the ones that had rebelled against the Father, so that ultimately in John chapter 1, that we can be sons of God through faith in Him. That's good news, isn't it? Because if it was about me and how perfect I had obeyed the will of God, how perfectly I'd have been as a son, I'd say it wasn't going to work that way. But what we have here is the true Rechabite that realizes our condition and cares about every one of us and is willing to die for us so that we can be right with our Heavenly Father. The picture in Jeremiah 35 is of a father who loves his children, wants them to be faithful and to be forgiven. But the point of Jeremiah 35 as well is the choice is ours. We can decide to respect Him and obey Him, or we can disrespect Him and disobey Him. And so that's the choice this morning for you. If you have not obeyed the gospel in obedience to the waters of baptism, what God has laid out to become a Christian, we'd be glad to help you with that this morning. Or perhaps if you're a child that needs prayer to be restored back in some way, we'd be glad to help in that way as well. We can help you in any way. We encourage you to come as we stand and as we sing.